Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Craig Crash Collins. I'm joined, as always, by Brandon Scott. You know him as B. Scott. Well, the Final Four is set, and today we're going to get in and break down all the action that's happening in Phoenix this weekend. First, we're going to obviously talk about Purdue's run as they make it to the Final Four for the first time in 40 years. We're going to be breaking down how the Boilers have gone from an opening round disappointment last year to ending that Final Four drought this year. Then we're going to look at the Final Four as a whole. We're going to answer a burning question for each Final Four team. We're going to be talking about the matchups we're looking forward to the most as far as potential national championships. And then we're obviously going to make our predictions. We're going to say who we think is going to be cutting down the nets it's a week from this past Monday. It'll be next Monday that a champion will finally be crowned. And first, B. Scott, I mean, look, we're going to do some housekeeping at the beginning with some of our tournament stuff. We didn't do a tournament preview, but hey, luckily Purdue came through for you, and we have a reason to talk about Purdue and your picks here late in the tournament.
I know. It was totally unbelievable. I mean, it felt different this year. Just watching the team, like, I was in Detroit on Friday night for the Sweet 16, and once that buzzer sounded, there wasn't a whole lot of celebrating. Like, yeah, we're moving on to the Elite Eight. It was just like normal game. It's done. And if you saw the video, the videos were hilarious. The video was hilarious, actually, in the locker room. What the NCAA does is somebody brings in a large oversized bracket, and they give the team their team name, and they stick it on the bracket to advance, and everybody goes nuts. That thing sat there and sat there and sat there. Finally, Miles Colvin just kind of wanders on over to it, picks up Purdue, puts it on the advanced part, gives a thumbs up, and walks away. And that's just kind of the way it's been. And it's been really, really cool. And then just to see the reactions making it to the Final Four, not just from the current players, but past players. I mean, I don't know if anybody's gotten a chance to hear the audio from the radio call with Robbie Hummel interviewing Matt Painter, and you could hear the tears in their conversation. Just it's just so cool. And then to see like Zach Edey cut down the net and give it to Gene Cady, who had come close multiple times as the Boilers head coach for many years and never quite got there, and now to see one of his former players, his protege, make it to the Final Four after a 44-year drought, it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the game with my family on Sunday, the Tennessee game, and you know, they were talking, you know, they showed Gene Cady, and I think it was either my mom or my dad was like, you know, didn't they make a Final Four with Gene Cady? I was like, no, they didn't make it with Gene Cady.
The last time they made the Final Four was in 1980, and that was the year before Gene Cady took over as head coach.
Yeah, which is pretty wild. So, I mean, you think about all the great teams they've had. I mean, you talk about Robbie Hummel. I saw somebody on TikTok today that was like, I thought when the Carson Edwards team didn't make it, we might never see it happen. And so we talked about at the beginning of the year, to see them do, kind of what we thought, could potentially happen. We're like, hey, Virginia did the same thing when they lost to a 16 seed. They came back more focused than ever the next year, and they won the whole darn thing. So we'll see if that's in the cards for Purdue. But
only difference is that, well, I'm noticing, a lot of people are noticing, Virginia had to get a lot of luck to get through it. If you think about it, look at that Elite Eight game. They were dead to rights to Purdue, and it took that Diamante Dekite, a tip back off of a missed free throw, and then to half court and a heave back to Dekite, and him just putting up a hope and a prayer and tying the game. I mean, Virginia was dead to rights. That got luck there. And then there was those weird calls or no calls or shots made or whatever in the Final Four against Auburn, and then some other weird calls again in the finals against Texas Tech. Whereas I don't feel like Purdue's really needed luck on their side up to this point. I mean, first and second round, no luck needed there. Gonzaga, I'll tell you what, Gonzaga, even though the game was close at halftime, Gonzaga came out of that locker room in the second half and they looked dejected. They just came like walking out onto the court from their locker room, just heads hung, shoulders hung. I was like, that's weird. And it fell apart for them in the second half. And then in Tennessee, I mean, it took Dalton Connect's best efforts and Purdue having a horrible shooting night to keep it close. And a 40, and just, you know, so I don't feel like as luck has had to be an issue here. Like sometimes people say, oh, you need to have good, not only good play, but good luck to get to this point in the tournament. Some of that's true, yes, but I don't think Purdue's had to worry about this that this year because they've just been so focused on handling business.
Yeah, they really have been focused. And I mean, what we were focused on a couple of weeks ago, of course, was our tournament picks. We, like I said, didn't have a selection show this year. We put out our brackets on Twitter and we're like, hey, think you can beat us? We did the whole 3C Media challenge, which is coming down to the wire, obviously. looking back at our final fours, I had UConn and Purdue. Of course, those two teams both made it. I had St. Mary's, who was upset by Grand Canyon in the round of 64. I really had St. Mary's pulling some magic. And then I had Houston as my national championship pick. They lost to Duke in the Sweet 16. I'll tell you what. So I was on TikTok, and my pick, what I based a lot of my picks on, was this guy was like, you know, has this thing called, he's a college basketball content creator. He's got like what's called the trapezoid of excellence. And it basically goes off of teams like pace of play and how teams match up. So that's like completely what I based my bracket on. And so, and it ends up with two out of four teams in the final four, which I feel like I probably could have got that on my own. So I don't know how much I'll factor it in, to next year's decisions, but yeah, it was basically like that trapezoid of excellence thing has like, oh yeah, it's predicted like the last four Final Fours or something like that. It predicted San Diego State to make it last year. And I was like, okay, we'll give that some credence. And it did not. I think it paid out about the same as I would have done on my own. B. Scott, your Final Four. You've got Purdue, your national championship pick. They're still in it. You had Kentucky. They were upset by Oakland in the round of 64. You had Iowa State, who lost to Illinois in the Sweet 16. And then UNC, who lost to Alabama in the Sweet 16. So, unfortunately, did not do as well as your state finals picks, but you did, which you did way better than me on those this past weekend. But those were our final fours. So B. Scott and I, we've both been mathematically eliminated from winning our own challenge, which that's fine. That's kind of what you want. You don't want to win.
I picked with my heart. You picked like behind the numbers. And I honestly, looking at my final four, I'm like, man, I really did not want Purdue to have to face UConn.
Right. Yeah. No
I
kidding.
Mean, when I looked at it, I'm like, come on. It really should have been. I should have had UConn there. Why did I have UConn? I think I had them losing to.
You would have had them losing, I think, to either Illinois, probably to Illinois. Yeah. If they were to lose.
No, I had it because Iowa State beat Illinois. Who did. Oh, I forget who it was. I had them.
You would have had to have. It was Auburn. I don't know. Somebody. Yeah.
Oh, it was Auburn. Yeah. I had them losing to Auburn, who.
Yeah. Hey, look, I had Auburn winning the whole thing in my my work pool. So, I was way
and
off
I
on
had,
them, too.
I had Alabama getting upset by Grand Canyon. See how much that worked out. I think also because I didn't want Purdue to have to play Alabama either.
Right. You're like, what's the best case for Purdue? How can we make it the best case scenario for Purdue? But it's all come down to two brackets. President Mumbles 25 and Jay Griffiths. President Mumbles has UConn winning it all. He just needs Purdue to not win it all to have the best chance at winning. He's got a 39% win probability. You also have Jay Griffiths, who has Purdue winning it all. He needs Purdue to reach the national championship, and he needs UConn to not win it all. That's his best chance to win. But he's got a 61% win probability. So we'll see what happens. If whoever comes out on top, we'll of course give those, you know, one of those two brackets a shout out next week. When the dust settles on that, but just wanted to give everybody an update on the 3C Media Bracket Challenge. And of course, you know, as we talk about the Final Four, we teased it a little bit. The biggest story is around the state is not necessarily the 3C Media Bracket Challenge, but it is indeed the Purdue Boilermakers.
Wait, it's not Indiana State playing in the NIT Final Four?
I was going to say, they're literally, we record these on Tuesday. They're playing right now. So,
Yeah, they're about ready to advance to the NIT final.
Yeah, man, which is wild. I mean,
Hinkle. It's at Hinkle.
Yeah, that, and then I was going to say the fact that, you know, we talked about a little bit before we went live, or before we hit record, that, like, you know, if it weren't for the team playing Purdue in the Final Four, Indiana State might be in.
Would have been.
Yeah, it would have been in the NCAA tournament, which would have been fun. But yeah, Purdue right now, of course, the Midwest Regional Final was this past Sunday. You had number one Purdue winning over number two Tennessee, 72-66. Zach Edey was a monster. He scores 40 points in that game. The rest of the team had 32. He ends up with 40 points, 16 rebounds. He was 14 of 22 from the line. He took 22 free throws in that game. Edey and Fletcher Lawyer were the only Boilermakers in double figures. Purdue was 3 of 15 from the line, from beyond the arc, I think is what I meant to put there. And the Boilers reached their first Final Four in 40 years, which is pretty incredible. So we wanted to take some time, obviously, you know, as this podcast, you know, focuses on a lot of stuff around Indiana and the Hoosier State. We wanted to give, obviously, a focus on Purdue. And, you know, the first thing, you know, we can't not talk about Purdue without mentioning, obviously, Zach Edey and his greatness. You know, not just, you know, in this tournament, but just over as it's his final, you know, run with Purdue, you know, to see, you know, what he's done and encapsulate the entire time that he's been at Purdue. He's been an absolute force since he's been there. And so the way I wanted to kick this off is describe Zach Edey's Purdue legacy in four words or less. And what I'm going to go with is, I don't know if it's going to be, when I was typing it out, I was like, I don't know if this will be controversial or not, but I was going to say, I feel like it's true already, and it'll only be made more true if
in terms of, in terms of just Purdue, it's definitely not.
Right. Yeah. But as far as, yeah, Purdue goes, cause that's what I wanted to go with, Purdue's legacy. But, you know, my four words for Zach Edey is greatest of all time. He's the greatest Boilermaker, in Purdue basketball history. He's the leading scorer, for the school with 2,459 points. His 926 points this season are third most in Purdue history for a single campaign. He's the leading rebounder all time for Purdue with, almost 1,300. He's at 1,299. He's the second player in Purdue history, to reach 1,000 rebounds. The first being Joe Barry Carroll. He broke his own school record for rebounds in a season this year, grabbing 452 boards. This season, he passed Rick Mount for most consecutive games with 10-plus points. He also set the school record for double-doubles, surpassing Terry Dischinger. He also became the sixth player in Big Ten history to have 2,000 points and 1,000 rebounds. He's a two-time consensus first-team All-American. He's a two-time Big Ten Player of the Year. He's the 2023 National Collegiate Player of the Year. So he's got the numbers. He's got the accolades. And if he and his boys pull off, from West Lafayette, pull off, this off and they win the Natty, like, I don't know. You know, we talked about, you know, you said already there wouldn't be anybody to put in front of him. And I agree with that. But especially if they were to go on and they were even if they just advance one game, I mean, that's just even more cementing the legacy of what Edey has done in West Lafayette. I mean, the names that I mentioned earlier that Edey passed on those all-time lists are currently considered the GOATs of Purdue history. And even if
Glenn Robinson's
in there as well. So, I mean, and even, like I said, even if they just beat NC State, he'll have led them to their first NCAA tournament runner-up finish since 1969, which is pretty insane. So,
in that they lost to John Wooden's UCLA squad.
So, I mean, Zach Edey, greatest Purdue basketball player of all time. It'll be even more better, obviously, if they were able to obviously finish the job and get the victory on Monday. But just what he's done so far and what he's been able to do and what he's meant to this program has just been insane. And it'll be sad to see him go, but I can't wait to see what this next game and hopefully two games has in store.
Yeah, I definitely greatest of all time is definitely what you consider him in a Purdue uniform. I think prior to the Elite Eight, you could have put him as 1A and 1B with Glenn Robinson, with Edey having a slight advantage just because he's most likely going to be a two-time National Player of the Year. But since he got the team to the Final Four, that puts him over the edge for to be considered the greatest of all time for Purdue men's basketball. A couple other things that come to mind. Legendary. And then the third way that comes to mind is he's not just tall. But that's the truth. I mean, that's what everybody keeps saying about him. He's just good because he's that tall. He's just tall. There's been other guys that are huge that have come through college basketball that were not National Player of the Year good. They didn't have a hook shot like his here recently. I mean, there was that guy that came through UNC Asheville that was like 7'7", and he could not move at all. I mean, he plundered up and down the court, and it was awful. Taco Fall was probably the closest it came to Zach Edey as far as skill goes, but like the footwork Edey has, and the fact that, I mean, he played all but 33 seconds on Sunday, all but 33 seconds. Technically he played 39 and a half minutes of basketball at 7'4", 300 pounds. I mean, that is unbelievable. His athleticism is crazy. I mean, somebody just go look at the picture of him blocking Dalton Connect's shot at the end of the game and look at the amount of height that Zach Edey gets up off the floor. Somebody that big should not be able to jump as high as he's able to jump. They shouldn't be able to have a spin move as good as his. Yes, I know, but he throws elbows. Well, of course he's throwing elbows when everybody is at elbow height. When you spin around, guess what? People are going to be there. I hate the talk of, well, he's only good because the officials bail him out. Are you kidding? Yeah, the officials have to call him certain ways when he's on. They can't call the same kind of fouls on him because they have to take into account his height. But at the same time, look, and at least I know in the Utah State game, there was one point where he went up for a layup and literally picked the Utah State player up with him because the guy was hanging from his elbow like he was a jungle gym. In the Gonzaga game, he went up for a layup and he got fouled. The foul did get called, but the Gonzaga player did not make a play on the ball, just whacked Edey in the head. And it's just like, majority of possessions, Edey will get fouled about 3 to 4 times before one gets called, if one doesn't get called. Now, that's not to say that on the other end, his size, the officials don't know how to handle that, and he might be committing some fouls that the officials are like, well, he's just bigger, so when he backs a guy down, of course the guy is going to go flying backwards a little bit more because it's just like that's physics. So yeah, some of it Edey might get away with some stuff there. I'm not going to say that he's perfect, I mean, but at the same time, he's skilled enough that he knows how to make the plays that need to be made without fouling. And that's, I mean, it's not like the guy just dunks and dunks and dunks and dunks. I mean, look, he's got that.
He hit a three.
He's hit 1-3. Yeah. I mean, but the fact that like he's hitting over 70% from the free throw line. So it's not like a hack a shack type deal. So I'm tired of hearing he's just tall, he's just big argument. Like, no, if you put Edey back in like the early 2000s, he would have already been in the NBA and number one overall draft pick. It's because that was the way the game of basketball is being played. People just don't like him really because it's his way of playing, and Purdue's way of playing is so old school. They don't play positionless basketball, which is what everybody wants to see. They want to see positionless basketball. They want to see guys 1 through 5 sitting there around the 3-point line, jacking threes up. And that's the unfortunate truth about it. But you were starting to see, even in the NBA, it kind of slowly returned back to that with a inside presence that's not always just camping out behind the 3-point line. But yes, Edey, he goes down as the greatest of all time in a Purdue uniform.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned Taco Fall, because that's where my brain first went to. But yeah, and I mean, you know, you mentioned how, you know, you have to call them a little bit differently. I remember listening to a podcast back, I think it was the year that I know this is NFL, but the year that the Panthers went to the Super Bowl, and they were talking about, you know, Cam Newton doesn't get the kind of personal foul calls that other quarterbacks get, and it's because he's bigger than all the other quarterbacks in the league. Like, he's just a more physical presence. So, you know, the things that look like personal fouls on other quarterbacks don't look like personal fouls on Cam Newton, because he's just so big and so bulky. So it's the same type of deal. You know, you can't, or it's like the strike zone in baseball. Like, obviously the strike zone for Jose Altuve is not the strike zone for Aaron Judge. So, I mean, you know, it's gotta be a little bit different, but yeah, I mean, what he's been able to do, yeah, it's not just been, hey, we're going to dump it down low to Zach and he's going to just turn around and dunk it. You know, he's been able to contribute in a bunch of different ways and show his versatility and athleticism. So, I mean, like I said, it's going to be,
And he's gotten better every year. What's crazy is that it was hard to imagine getting better after last year. Like, okay, the team around him's gotten better, so his numbers will probably decline, but that's a good thing. No, the team around him has gotten better. Their numbers have gotten better, and so have his. It's like, which is why Purdue's in the Final Four. Let's be honest. It's just, it's crazy how he has continuously gotten better every year. And the fact that he was a player that he was overlooked. He was I think ranked in the 400s. And the only reason why Purdue even got on his radar was because he reclassified up a class. Purdue had missed on Hunter Dickinson and Ryan Kalkbrenner, and they were in the market still for a center. They needed a big guy to back up Travion, especially after Matt Harms ditched. It was like, oh boy, what are we going to do now? And luckily, one of the assistants, I believe it was Steve Lutz, who, congratulations to Steve Lutz, who's just named the head coach at Oklahoma State, brought up to Matt Painter, hey, there's this guy that just reclassified down at IMG Academy. He's backing up their all-star, their stud center, Armando Bacot. North Carolina center. And he hasn't been playing ball that long. He's a hockey player and a baseball player mostly, but worth a check. They brought him up. They offered him. And he committed, and the rest is history. If Purdue would have landed one of those two other targets that they had, and Hunter Dickinson was almost 100% to Purdue, and then Juwan Howard became head coach at Michigan, he was like, I want to go play for Juwan Howard. And then Ryan Kalkbrenner was like, I don't want to leave too far away from home, so I'm going to go play at Creighton, which is closer to home for me. And had either one of those guys landed at Purdue, I think it's a totally different story right now.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, Purdue getting better from last year to this year, because that actually transitions greatly into the next question that I had, which is, what is the biggest difference between Purdue, this Purdue Final Four team, and the one that was upset by Farley Dickinson a year ago? And, you know, and for me, you know, you talked about the scoring. It sounds simple, but they're just a much better scoring team than they were a year ago. In the loss to Farley Dickinson, Purdue shot 36% from the floor. They had 9 games total last season where the Boilers shot below 40%. They have just one game this season where Purdue has shot below 42%. That was the first game versus Tennessee, where they shot 35% from the floor. Of course, that was a win in Maui earlier in November.
I'm pretty sure it happened again on Sunday.
I don't think so. Or either that or Basketball Reference didn't update with that, but it should have. I guess it was, maybe it was Sunday night that I did that. So I don't know. It could have, it may not have been, but, it might have happened again, but even then, that's only 2 games where they shot worse than 42% on the season. Purdue was 153rd in the country in scoring last year, averaging 73 points per game. They're 10th this season, scoring 84 points a game. There's four Boilermakers that average double figures in terms of points per game this season. Of course, Zach Edey averages 25. Braden Smith and Lance Jones both average 12. Fletcher Lawyer averages 11. Last year, that number was just 3. Edey was averaging 22. Lawyer was averaging 11. And Braden Smith was averaging 10 points per game. Whether it's Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer taking a step forward in their sophomore seasons, or whether it's the addition of Lance Jones, Purdue is simply better at putting points on the board, and at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. So Purdue's just a better scoring team than they were last season, and I think that's made, obviously, all the differences. Now they're 2 wins away from potentially a national title.
So there's a few things here that are why they are better. One, their guards are a year older. They're more experienced. They know what to expect now. Like Fletcher Lawyer and especially Braden Smith have taken a huge step forward. And two, the athleticism has gotten a ton better with the addition of Lance Jones, freshman Miles Colvin, and redshirt freshman Cam Heidi. You can't overlook that athleticism, especially on the perimeter. Purdue had trouble defending the perimeter last year, and bringing in Lance Jones has really helped make that better. But yeah, you're right. The scoring has gotten better. They went from one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country last year to the best three-point shooting team in the country this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the improvement year over year has just been, you know, great. And I mean, that's just, you know, and obviously we've seen it. We've seen it, you know, take shape, you know, with what they've been able to do in this tournament run, which also, you know, makes you wonder, you know, yeah.
We got 8 minutes.
Yeah, we're good. We got it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you have more that you wanted to elaborate on with the okay.
No.
Yeah, because I was just getting ready to get into, you know, who do we think is the unsung hero of this run to the Final Four? You know, who has been kind of the, you know, player that's kind of risen to the top and kind of helped aid in this run? And, you know, it's been the usual suspects. It was kind of hard to pick this out. You know, it's, you know, because it's been mainly the usual suspects that have contributed for Purdue during this tournament run. Lance Jones felt like a weird choice since he's a starter, even though he, like you said, he has, you know, he has made a big difference on this team. But I'm really going to go off of one game here, and it's a game where he didn't score any points. But I'm going to go with Mason Gillis. You know, it's the only Purdue win this tournament where that was decided by less than 12 points. Against Tennessee, Gillis did some dirty work off the bench. He had 8 rebounds, which was second most behind Edey. He had 6 on the defensive side, so he was preventing those second chance points. He had 3 assists to his credit as well, third most in the game for the Boilers. He also had 6 points and 3 assists versus Gonzaga, the second most on the team in assists versus the Bulldogs. So they'll need strong performances off the bench if they're going to obviously continue to advance. And even if it's not something that pops off the screen, still to get performances like that off the bench where you have guys grabbing rebounds, facilitating the basketball, it's still going to mean a lot. So Mason Gillis is kind of my unsung hero. You know, like I said, maybe not of the entire tournament run, but definitely was a big contributor on Sunday and a big reason why we're talking about them in the way we're talking about them right now.
Yeah, it is Mason Gillis. It's 100%. Whether it's been all season long, the tournament, run to the Final Four, it doesn't matter. Look, Mason Gillis is the ultimate team guy. This is a player that coming into his senior year, he probably could have transferred if he wanted to, finding out that he wasn't going to be a starter anymore, that he was losing his starting spot to Trey Kaufman-Wren. But that's not Mason Gillis. Mason Gillis is the ultimate team guy. He is going to do what needs to be done to help this Purdue team win. He is the first guy off the bench, and honestly, he is putting in starter-type minutes for the Boilermakers. But he has a penchant for coming up in big spots and hitting huge three-pointers late in games to either give Purdue the lead back or push the lead far enough forward that the opponent can't really, it's kind of the nail in the coffin deal. But yeah, Mason Gillis, one of these guys that it's just, I reminds me of the last time Purdue had the run to the Elite Eight. They had that glue guy in Grady Eifert. But Mason Gillis just takes it a step farther. And I mean, I think any team would love to have a player like Mason Gillis coming off of their bench.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, We're going to be talking about other unsung heroes of the tournament a little bit later, but I think Mason Gillis can definitely be that guy that we're talking about, you know, come, you know, next Monday, next Tuesday is like, hey, why did what was the difference for Purdue? It's going to be performances like the ones that Mason Gillis can provide. So really excited to see what Purdue can do. Obviously, we're not done talking about Purdue, but now we're going to widen our stance more into the Final Four as we get ready to talk about all the Final Four teams. Let's indeed now shift our focus to the Final Four. Sorry if that was a little bit of a clunky transition. Zoom was angry at us, so we've got that rectified. And now it's time to talk about the Final Four coming up this weekend. In case you need to catch up, of course, number one, UConn wins the East region with a 77-52 win over number three, Illinois. They had a 30-0 run at one point in that game. They're trying to become the first team since Florida in 06 and 07 to win back-to-back NCAA tournaments. Then you've got number four, Alabama. They defeated number six, Clemson. This isn't college football playoff time. It is actually the NCAA tournament. They win the West Regional Final 89-82 to advance their first Final Four in program history. Mark Sears had 23 points in the win. Jaron Stevenson had 19 points off the bench. Number one, Purdue, obviously, as we talked about, rides Zach Edey's Herculean effort to win the Midwest Region 72-66 over number two, Tennessee, to advance to their first Final Four in 4 years. And then you have number 11, NC State, scoring 55 second-half points to beat number four Duke 76-64 and win the South region, their first Final Four since 1983. So I thought, what better way to preview the Final Four than to do a hot or cold question for, or a hot or cold statement for each team. If you are new to the Crash Course podcast, our hot or cold segment is basically where we say a statement and we say whether or not that statement is a hot take or a cold take. And so the take for UConn is this one. This team is the best of UConn's Final Four teams. And I think this is a hot take. This is the seventh Final Four for UConn. They made it in 1999, 2004, 2009. That was 2009 was the only time they did not win the whole thing. They also made it in 2011, 2014, 2023, and now 2024. Of those seven Final Fours, they've been a number one seed three times, 1999, 2009, and this season. In 1999, they lost just two games all regular season, won their tournament games by an average of 12 points. Then they had Richard Hamilton go on to be drafted in the 1999 NBA draft. In 2009, they won just three games they lost just three games all season. It'd be weird if they were one seed only winning three games. They had a Detroit Mercy level season and still made the tournament. They won their tournament games by an average of 25 points. Hashim Thabeet and AJ Price were drafted in the subsequent draft. This season, they have also just three losses. They've won their tournament games by an average of 28 points with Donovan Klingon and Stephon Castle both projected to go in the first round of the NBA draft this season. All those teams were number one seeds with three or fewer losses, and this is the UConn team with the highest average margin of victory of any of those Final Four teams, and they have potential NBA talent to boot. When I first wrote this take down, I was like, maybe they aren't the most talented team because they had, I think even that 1999 team had more than just Richard Hamilton, but I wanted to just focus on like what came after, directly after that first that season. Cause I was like, obviously these teams have, guys drafted years later or whatever, but I was like, I wanted to focus on just the guys drafted in that next draft. But I definitely think if anything else, it's the most dominant team. I think this is the best UConn team that we've seen. The other years, they either weren't as high of a seed or they weren't as dominant. I think a lot of the times, a lot of their other Final Four runs, they did win by an average of like 12, 13 points. But we've now, that 2009 season and now this season, I mean, beating teams by an average of 20 some points. I mean, I know obviously as a one seed, you're playing a 16 seed and you're playing an 8 seed, but to win your games by that much is just insane. So yeah, I think this is the best UConn team to make the Final Four of the teams that have made the Final Four for them.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I think this is a hot take. I mean, I really kind of wanted to say lukewarm because of the 1999 team. But when you look at this, the pure dominance that UConn has put forth, especially here within the tournament, it's been crazy. I have to agree. I mean, let's just be honest. They look like they could run away with the whole thing right now. So as of right now, I will say that as a hot take, this is the best UConn team to make the Final Four.
I mean, look, they look like they could run away the whole thing. I had to keep reminding myself because I almost dismissed the 2009 season for UConn because I was like, well, they didn't win the whole thing. And I had to be like, well, wait, they haven't. They technically have not won the whole thing in this situation either.
A little peek forward to making your picks. Here's a little couple of fun facts, Final Four fun facts real quick. One, both UConn and NC State men's and women's teams have made their Final Fours, but the UConn men and women have won the national championship at the same time twice before in their every 10 years, 2004, 2014, 10 years apart. And we're 10 years apart from the last time it happened.
That's pretty wild.
I'm just saying it's,
hey, that's usually me doing that.
There's a lot of creepy numbers, a lot of creepy coincidences and things that are going into this Final Four that I see. Like the fact that, did you know, last time NC State made the Final Four and they won the national championship, it was led by Jim Valvano. They beat Virginia in the national championship game, who was led by the last two-time national player of the year, Ralph Sampson.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're talking to the guy that usually is always living in those trends and coincidences.
Those scenarios.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, that's pretty wild. I knew that they had won it. The UConn had won both before, but I didn't realize they were literally 10 years apart, which is, that's
10
wild.
10 years apart, and it's 10 years ago it happened the last time.
Right. For Alabama, my take is this. Nate Oates will be to Bama's basketball program what Nick Saban was to Bama's football program. I started out really wanting to say hot take here, but I am going to say it's a cold take, just because I think the equivalent of Nick Saban in college basketball would be like a Mike Krzyzewski or a Bob Knight, someone with multiple championships. And I think, I think Bama could win a title with Nate Oates. I think they will at the helm. But it's very tough, obviously, to win one, let alone, I mean, you know, they talked about it on Sunday during the broadcast of the Purdue team, Purdue game. Like, look how good Purdue has had. Look how good the Purdue teams have been. Look how good the program has been. And they've just now made it back to the Final Four for the first time in 40 years. Like, it's tough to do. So to expect multiple titles from Alabama when it's just their first Final Four ever might be a little bit too ambitious. But I do think where I was going with the statement is that I think he can put this program on the map and make them a consistent contender. Because I was struggling with what I wanted to do with Nate Oates in Alabama. I was like, do I want to say that, do I want the hot or cold take to be, the one that I wrote down, or the one that I was like, where I was like, well, could they be the next, is this the introduction to them being the next blue blood of college basketball, which, we'll wait and see on that one. But I think, I think Nate Oates can put this team on the map consistently. I mean, Oates and the Tide were a number two seed and made the Sweet 16 in 2021. They were a number one seed last NCAA tournament and earned another Sweet 16 appearance. They are a four seed with Alabama. Alabama's a four seed and in this year's Final Four. Prior to Oates, Bama hadn't made consecutive Sweet 16s since the mid-1980s and hadn't made the Elite Eight since 2004. So Nate Oates is signed through 2030. He signed an extension earlier this year. And I think he can have either a Bill Self or Jay Wright-like run in Tuscaloosa. A couple of titles and regular solid runs in the NCAA tournament. So I think he can be kind of that next, like, if he's not already, I think he can be like that next household name, like a Tom Izzo, like a Bill Self, like a Jay Wright was at Villanova. And I think they can, he can bring them to a couple of magical runs. So that Alabama program, they're on the up and up. And I think Nate Oates, you know, can be kind of the next, you know, legendary tier one coach in college basketball.
Yeah. I mean, so this statement, you can take it two different ways, really. Like, people loved Nick Saban in Alabama, and what he meant to Alabama football, I think, is what Nate Oates could mean to Alabama basketball. Not on a dynasty level as Nick Saban was, but as a program builder and yeah, along those lines, somebody that, so I honestly, the way I look at this statement, I'm going to say it's a hot take because of what he will mean to the school and the athletic department and how people will come to him and the way that, I mean, he's, you can, Nate Oates is one. Okay. So it's kind of hard how to word this exactly. Nate Oates has a little bit of Matt Painter in him. He looks for certain things in players, whether he's going to find that recruiting or he's going to find that in the transfer portal. He has a little bit of Matt Painter in him because he views analytics so highly. He's an analytical, everything's analytics, and that's how he coaches it. His game plan's based on analytics, and it works. But where he differs on some of these other big name coaches out there, like Matt Painter or the Jay Wrights or the Tom Izzos and everything, is NIL type stuff. He's more willing to dive in head first on those types of things, whereas in the transfer portal, whereas coaches like Tom Izzo, Matt Painter, even when Jay Wright was there prior to the whole transfer portal fiascos, they don't utilize it to build their program. They utilize it to patch holes if necessary. So that's the difference there. But yes, the only thing I think that could potentially hinder Nate Oates in his legacy is how things were handled last year involving Brandon Miller. And I can't remember the other player's name who was actually kicked off the team and charged with murder. That whole situation just kind of put a shadow over the program for a little bit. And I think getting to the Final Four this year helps come out from underneath that shadow. But I mean, some people still remember, people are going to remember that. But I think definitely when it's all said and done, what Nick Saban meant to the football program and that's in the athletic department, Nate Oates will be the same thing with Alabama. Now, the question is, will he stay at Alabama? If something like Kansas opened up and Kansas came calling, do you go to Kansas? Do you go to UCLA if it opens up? Or like, what if Hubert Davis doesn't stick around long at North Carolina? You know, there's potentials, or Indiana, if Indiana wants to believe they're still a blue blood, but I don't know. So that there's a lot of questions, but I think if he sticks around at Alabama, then yes, he could have the same meaning.
Yeah, you talked about being able to take it a couple of different ways. I almost wanted to say hot just because of the fact that success in college basketball is measured differently than it is in college football. So, you know, if Nate Oates makes, I mean, obviously he would still have to have a national championship, but he doesn't have to have like six or whatever Nick Saban ended up with at Alabama.
I think it's so much harder though to win a national championship in basketball than it is in football.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is that like it's measured differently. So like if he were to make, you know, four or five Final Fours, which I mean, that's still a gaudy number, but I mean, if you were to make, you know, like let's say three or four, like that would be looked at, not necessarily obviously the same as a national championship in football, but would be determined on kind of that same level of success as like he's a legendary successful coach just because, like I said, success is measured differently than it is, you know, from sport to sport. So yeah, I definitely think.
Also, remember, football is God in Alabama.
I almost went full head first into this thing and said, like, Alabama will be a basketball school. It's now going to be
circling. There's a video circling around social media right now. It's these two, like, or this group of, like, I'm telling you, Hilljack Alabama fans that probably have never stepped foot on the campus of Alabama, or at least a classroom in Alabama. And they're just like, Roll Tide, Roll Tide forever, Tide forever. And then the toothless old man goes, Tide are going to win 21-17. And it's like you're walking into a basketball game.
I mean, look, we've seen some basketball games in the Big Ten of, you know, years ago that could have ended up that way. But
that's true.
But speaking of the Big Ten, moving on to Purdue's hot or cold statement. The statement is this. Purdue has the best chance to win the NCAA tournament of these final four teams. And I think this is a close one. I mean, when you look at, because I think obviously the two teams that have the highest, like, probability of making it to the national championship is Purdue and UConn. According to ESPN's BPI predictions, Purdue and UConn both have an 80% chance or better, have a 80% or better chance of advancing to the national championship. They're both number one seed, so that's not super surprising, but I would say the Huskies are the only team I would consider putting above the Boilermakers. Obviously, I think they have the next best chance of winning the tournament. UConn is winning games by an average of 28 points. As I mentioned before, their tournament wins have included Northwestern of the Big Ten, San Diego State, who finished 24th in the final rankings, and Illinois, who finished 10th in the final rankings. The Huskies were 7-2 versus tournament teams during the regular season. You look at Purdue, they've won their tournament games by an average of 19 points. Their tournament wins include wins over Gonzaga, who finished 18th in the final rankings, for the season for college basketball, and then Tennessee, who finished sixth in the final rankings. Purdue, just by virtue of being in the Big Ten, had a lot more games against tournament teams. They were 14-3 against tournament teams during the regular season. So it's close. I mean, both have very strong resumes, but I think and have been dominant in this tournament. But I think I still do lean a little bit more towards UConn being the best team still alive in the tournament. Just, you know, like I said, both teams are good. Purdue, I think, maybe has been a little bit more battle tested, but UConn just did this last year. They made the same run a year ago, and there are some players that are still on this team from that run a year ago. And I think even then, you know, in a close race like this, I think that kind of even more gives you a little bit of a leg up. So, I think UConn is the best team still alive, with obviously Purdue being a close second.
Yeah, I agree. I hate to say it, but it's a cold take. Now, if the question was, Purdue is the best team suited to beat UConn, then yeah, that's a hot take. I know it kind of sounds, but you're saying Purdue can beat UConn, but you're saying they're not the best team. They're not overall have the best chance to win the national championship. Yes, I think right now the team to beat is clearly UConn. And I have no shame in that. It's honest. It's the honest opinion. As a Purdue fan, I wouldn't even feel bad if we got to the national championship and lost to UConn, because it's like, well, hey, it was the best two teams all season long. Best two teams came down to this, and, you know, you lost to the reigning national champion who has been on an absolute heater. So you can't feel bad about that one. But yes, this is a cold take. I don't think right now of the four Final Four teams, Purdue is the best of the four. I think Purdue is a close second behind UConn, but not the best.
And finally, in terms of NC State, their statement, you know, for hot or cold, is NC State is the best 11 seed to make the Final Four. They became just the sixth team to make the Final Four as an 11 seed. They join, they also join the 2018 Loyola Chicago squad as 11 seeds that made the Final Four after winning their conference tournament. All the other teams, I was surprised George Mason didn't win there. Like, I was surprised George Mason was in that large bid as an 11
seed.
Yeah. So, like, the 11 seeds are, like, LSU in 1986, You've got George Mason in 2011. You've got VCU, which another team I was surprised in. I apparently I was just oblivious to the Colonial Athletic Association's dominance in the 2000s and early 2010s, because VCU and George Mason both made it as at-large bids from those conferences, which is pretty wild. I thought they had, both those teams had won their conference tournament. So NC State, Loyola, Chicago, those are the only two 11 seeds to win their conference tournament, become 11 seeds in the NCAA tournament, and then go on to make the Final Four. And I think, obviously, when you look at those two teams, NC State is from a better conference than Loyola Chicago, and they've won by double the amount of points that the Ramblers did during their tournament run. Loyola kept their games very close. NC State's actually pulled away from other teams. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if the Wolfpack became the first 11 seed to appear in the national championship game and potentially win it all. I mean, they are just on a hot streak. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying I could see them winning it all, just because we talk about it all the time, getting hot at the right time, you know, finding your magic. They've definitely done that, you know, this March.
Yeah, I agree. This is a hot take. For me, all I have to look at is the fact NC State had to beat Duke three times this month. Three times you had to beat the same team, and it wasn't just the same team, it was Duke. I will say Duke kind of waved the white flag on Sunday evening. If you watch the defense that Kyle Filipowski played on DJ Burns Jr., ooh, talk about your draft stock taking a hit. I mean, that was horrible. I mean, just okay. But at the same time, Kyle Filipowski was also playing with foul trouble and ultimately ended up fouling out. but yeah, this NC State team, you want to say, oh no, that's not the best 11th seed, because if they didn't win their tournament, they wouldn't even be in this. They didn't win their conference tournament, they wouldn't even be in this tournament. But, you know, sometimes, like I said, sometimes luck has to be on your side, and luck and being on a heater is what's going good for NC State right now. So they're riding it to the Final Four.
I thought it might be fun here, before we get to our predictions, I thought it might be fun to rank the potential national championship games. You know, as we go through it here, because we have four different opportunities, and I think they all present their own unique good, you know, pros and cons. You know, the one I'm looking forward to the most is number one UConn versus number one Purdue. Obviously, two number one seeds, two top teams, you know, who finished the season in the top three in the final rankings. This would be the highest quality matchup in terms of basketball. So that's the number one matchup for me. The second matchup for me is number four Alabama versus number one Purdue. This is two top 10 offenses in terms of points per game. Bama averages 91 points per game. Purdue averages 84 points per game. This would be obviously, I think, in my opinion, be the best chance for Purdue to win the national championship if they make it there. Then I don't know. We probably have this flip-flopped. I actually have, as my third, matchup I'd be looking forward to the most, number four Alabama versus number 11 NC State. I mean, that's just chaos. That's just what the NCAA tournament's all about. You know, two teams nobody would have predicted battling for the title. Bama was ranked 19th in the final rankings. NC State was under 500 in the ACC this season and needed to win their conference tournament just to even be here. This, you know, that matchup would be the embodiment of March Madness. Because even when we had years ago, we had like UConn and Kentucky as like 8 and 9 seeds, but at least those two teams are like blue bloods, as opposed to, you know, NC State and Alabama. And then I think the one I'm looking forward to the least, is number one UConn versus number 11 NC State. That's got the highest chance for an upset, but also the highest chance for a blowout. UConn won by 17 last season over SDSU, and I think we'd see a similar outcome if that was national championship game. So a lot of, like I said, a lot of pros and cons on what you can see, you know, this coming weekend.
What's funny is this is my exact same order as well. Yes, obviously the top of the list is the gigantic collision course that we all feel that we're on right now of UConn versus Purdue. The two best teams, hands down, throughout the entire season, start to finish. Alabama versus Purdue is another exciting matchup, one that we've already seen this year, but one that would now be played in the United States versus being played in Toronto. as it was earlier in the year. And that was an exciting, high-scoring affair where, it, I mean, it could be that exact same kind of battle again. Alabama versus NC State. Yeah, it could be fun. And then obviously the worst one would definitely be UConn versus NC State. But yeah, the top two are going to be fun regardless. Number one, wow. And I think honestly, in the end, I think number one would just be a toss-up. It could honestly be a toss-up because both teams' strengths kind of clash. So it's going to be a battle of the Titans, to be honest. It's what everybody wants to see.
Well, let's not make everyone wait any longer. Let's go ahead and get into our predictions for the Final Four. It's finally that time. We've got a little bit of a difference here as far as we're going to add another little layer here. We're going to start off with predicting who is an under-the-radar player we'll be talking about after the Final Four. For me, it's going to be UConn senior Hassan Diarra. He's scored 11 points, and he had 3 rebounds off the bench versus Illinois in the Elite Eight. He had 10 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists off the bench versus San Diego State in the Sweet 16. He had 9 points, 4 rebounds off the bench in the Big East Championship versus Marquette. Purdue doesn't quite have that kind of reliability from a scoring standpoint. I think that'll be our national championship. I'm going to just kind of throw that out there right now. And I just think that there is a chance a presence like Diarra off the bench could be the difference maker. So I think having a guy like that who can score and do the dirty work, kind of like what I mentioned earlier with Mason Gillis, I think that's huge. I think we might be talking about, you know, what an insane performance by Hassan Diarra hitting a shot here or there late in the game. If UConn were to win it all.
So my player that's under the radar right now that we'll be talking about after the Final Four is Purdue redshirt freshman Cam Heidi. Look, this kid he's the second player off the bench, right? I mean, he's almost 1A, 1B with Mason Gillis as far as players coming off the bench. He's a kid that he's already done it once this year, can just go off on an unbelievable shooting night. His athleticism is through the roof. The kid is a literal pogo stick. With him, you don't only have to worry about the offensive rebound because him getting in there, but because he's kind of long, rangy, wiry, and bouncy, he can come in there and all of a sudden he has kind of wiggled his way through and he's flying through the air and with a putback dunk. I mean, this is a kid that his athleticism is a game changer. And I think he is going to be one of those players that's going to all of a sudden have a huge game again. And whether it be to propel Purdue into the national championship game or propel Purdue to a national championship win, it's yet to be seen. But I do believe Cam Heidi is going to be one of those players that we are talking about after the Final Four that we are not currently talking about right now.
As far as the two games on Saturday, it'll all get... Actually, Purdue and NC State's the first game. I was going to start with UConn, Alabama, but Purdue and NC State's the first game. Number one Purdue versus number 11 NC State. I have Purdue advancing. Shouldn't be any sort of a shocker here. The Wolfpack, in my opinion, haven't played a team with the presence inside that matches Zach Edey. I think that's going to be a difference. It's going to be really fun to watch the battle between Edey and DJ Burns Jr. I think that's going to be fun to watch. But I do think the Boilers advance. As far as the second game, number one UConn versus number four Alabama, I've got UConn advancing. Shouldn't be a super big shock. UConn's played two teams with a better scoring average than them this tournament, and of course they came out on top. Plus they have the best defense in terms of points allowed. They're the best team defensively still left in the tournament in that category. So I think UConn and Purdue will be the matchup that we see coming up on Monday for the national championship.
All right, so Purdue versus NC State. I have Purdue winning that one too. Yes, the Edey Burns Jr. matchup is going to be a fun one. The biggest difference in this, though, is, well, there's two things that are going to lead to a Purdue victory. One, Burns, like you said, has not played against somebody of the caliber of Edie. And I think Edie's conditioning and just overall size is going to wear down quickly on DJ Burns Jr. And which ultimately, when that starts happening, fouls start getting committed. If NC State starts getting into foul trouble, that spells bad news for them. They usually only run about seven deep. So they don't really have that deep of a bench to go to, unlike Purdue. Purdue can run anywhere from seven all the way to 10 deep, depending on what they choose to do. So I got Purdue winning that one. UConn versus Alabama. I think this is going to be the more entertaining of the two games on Saturday. Of the two games that could potentially see an upset, I believe this is the one that could potentially see it. Just because Alabama's three-point shooting is outstanding. And that could be a huge, that's a tough thing to overcome. Yeah, UConn's got scorers all over the court as well, inside and out, but Alabama just shoots, just tries to shoot you right out of the gym. So there's a potential upset there, but I am going UConn to advance to the national championship. It is, like I said, a battle of the giants coming up, and not literally with Devin Klingman and Zach Edey, but I'm talking about the two best teams in the country battling out for a national championship come Monday night.
We both have UConn and Purdue in the national championship. And as far as who I think is going to win that one, I'm going to go with UConn. UConn has a defense that ranks in the top 10 and an offense that ranks in the top 25 in terms of scoring. Purdue is 10th offensively, but barely in the top 100 on defense in terms of points allowed per game. So I think UConn is the more complete team statistically. And I think, you know, the Boilers have not faced a defense as good as UConn in terms of points allowed per game this season. There's a couple of teams in the Big Ten that are kind of up there, but not necessarily as good as UConn is on defense. And so I'll go against my heart on this one. It'll be one of those. It'll be the Craig Crash special where I'm like, you know what? I have the team I want to win. I'm going to have the team that I predict to win. So that way, either way, I feel good. Either I was right, or I the team that I wanted
And
to
happy.
win. Yeah. Either I'm right or I'm happy. That's basically the two choices. So I'll go UConn over Purdue. Hey, look, in the as far as the 3C media bracket, I did pick Purdue in the Boston Rob bracket. But as far as what I'm like, I always finish like 114th in that one, so I'm not even worried about that. As far as the bracket I filled out for the 3C media challenge. I picked picking against Purdue has been good for me so far, as far as Purdue advancing. So I'm gonna stick with that strategy. UConn wins. They're back to back champions. First back to back champions since 2006, 2007.
Florida, right here in Indianapolis is where they won that second one at the RCA Dome. My gut says UConn, my heart says Purdue. I'm going with my heart. I don't know, just the story, the path, as same as like with Virginia, with Purdue was on the path for Virginia at that time. And something just tells me Purdue wins this national championship. Gene Katie gets to be out there, hoist that trophy with that team, be a part of the neck cutting ceremony. I hate to say it. I hate to say it, but Gene Katie has not been looking all that good health wise. Unfortunately, I just kind of feel like this is it. If you want Gene Katie to be a part of a national championship, this is it. And I think they get it done, not just for Coach Painter, but for Coach Katie as well. And it's one of those kind of fairy tale endings for a guy like Gene Katie, to finally see a program that he has invested his life into win a national championship, led by a coach that he coached, that he mentored, that he cares so much about. I don't know. It's just that storybook ending. And it's one of those that you just kind of feel could happen. Yes, you feel like the inevitable is going to happen with UConn winning. I don't know. I don't know. Something's telling me deep down. My gut is still saying UConn, but below it, like in the bubble gut, that's saying there's something brewing. I don't know what it may be, but it's something. I'm going Purdue to finish the storybook ending, cap off an amazing career for Zach Edey, give Gene Katie that national championship experience. Coach Painter gets that monkey completely off his back and goes and is now considered one of the best coaches in college basketball officially.
Well, hey, let's hope that that feeling in your gut is right and it's not just gas. Because I hope that it's I hope that you're right. Like I said, I'm going with UConn I'm hoping what you're hoping. I'm hoping that Purdue finally can get it done. But that will do it for this week's edition of the Crash Course Podcast. Thank you guys all for hanging out. Remember that you can like us on Facebook, 3C Media. Go follow us over on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at 3C Media Sports. I guess you could call it X Twitter because it is X Twitter. And then as far as the, if you're trying to find a different way to listen, if you're listening to us on the podcast app, head over to the YouTube channel, 3C Media over there, hit subscribe, ring the bell. Also, 3C Media on TikTok if you want to see clips of the show, that kind of thing. And then if you're on the YouTube channel, head on over to the podcast app where you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Podcast. You can find me at Crash Course FM on Twitter. B. Scott, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Scott87.
Next week, we'll still be talking some basketball. We'll be talking a little bit of Caitlin Clark. We'll be talking about that and maybe even a Purdue win, question mark. It'll be a lot of fun. But until then, have a good week. Enjoy the Final Four, everybody.